Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, May 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Time for another of our regular sessions with Chef Gail Sokol. Chef Gail is an educator, an author, a podcaster, a YouTube sensation already, and she's a fine baker. And we talk baking every so often on this show with Chef Gail. Today, she told me she wanted to talk about curds. My first question was, what's a curd? She said it's a stovetop custard, like lemon or lime or that. I always thought it was like cheese curds, but she brought a lemon meringue pie. I do not see any cheese curds in it, so I must be wrong. If you know what she's talking about, call us, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. The curds, the chef, and you. Coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for Food Friday is award-winning chef, educator, and author Gail Sokol. Gail was a faculty member for years at Schenectady Community College and the Sage Colleges. She's the author of a widely used textbook entitled About Professional Baking and a cookbook, Baking with Success. She has a successful podcast called Baking Radio and is the star of a great number of really entertaining and informative baking how-to videos on YouTube, one of which we have embedded in today's Vox Pop page. Today, Chef Gail wants to talk about curds. Who am I to argue? The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us as we get rolling here at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Chef Gail, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
How's it going?
It's going well.
It's hot out there.
It's hot out there. That's why this meringue tart, this lime curd, it's so light. You almost feel like you've been air conditioned in your stomach because it's so light and citrusy, right?
Oh my gosh, and the citrus hits you right over the head. All right, so we're going to reverse order. Usually okay. We talk a while and then talk about what you brought, but this is really as you have mentioned over the last couple of months when you've been on, we've done heavier things.
Yes, we've been on a chocolate streak and whipped cream, and this is lighter, airier. It just sort of, you know, makes you want to go into spring and summer really, really gracefully.
Oh my gosh, it is delicious. It is a lime curd
meringue tart,
and it is phenomenal. Our call screener Barb King gives it a thumbs up. Zach the engineer, yeah, yes, okay, good. Zach has a hate-o-meter for me, and usually on Fridays it goes down a little bit because there's some food. So I'm in good stead today. Thank you,
good,
Chef
good.
Gail. All right, how do we make this thing?
All right, so you're gonna make a sugar cookie crust first, and you're going to bake it blind. You've heard me say that before,
yeah, but what
right?
What does that mean?
You bake it without any filling in it. So you make this beautiful crust. It's almost like a sugar cookie dough.
Yeah.
And you chill it, and then you roll it out and put it in a false bottom tart pan. You put parchment paper in it. You have a little meringue on your mustache.
Thank you.
And then you put some raw beans, you know, like dried beans.
What?
Or pie weights, just to keep it from puffing up in the oven. Bake it, and then you gently take the parchment off with the beans, and you have this beautiful shell that you can fill with this beautiful lime curd.
Now, here's a sort of a practical question.
Yes.
If you're going to blind bake a crust like this,
yes,
can't you go and find a high-end crust already made and save some time?
No, sir.
No?
You cannot do that.
Why?
No. Because where on the market are you going to find a high-end crust? I've worked in restaurants where there is no high-end crust. You have to make them yourself. And it's all butter, and it's delicious. There's a little bit of heavy cream in the crust and an egg yolk and flour and sugar, and that's it.
You know, having been to a couple of eating establishments in my time,
just a couple,
there have been a few crusts that have not been as exquisite as this. What's your trick?
I think that when you make the sugar cookie crust, remember, this is not a pie crust that you would use for an apple pie. It's different. You don't cut the fat in like with a pastry blender. This is something where you're letting your butter get to room temperature. You're going to cream it with your sugar. You're going to add an egg yolk. that is going to tenderize. It's going to coat all the gluten strands, all the protein gluten strands in your flour, and it's going to not allow gluten to form. So it's going to have just enough for structure, but it's going to be tender, and it's going to be delicious.
All right, you use the term cut in the fat. Now, remember, one of these days, we're going to get to that show that you and I want to do where you teach me all these things. What is cutting in the fat?
All right, so cutting in the fat, have you seen a pastry blender?
No.
It looks like a stirrup, and it's got like sort of like rings, like U-shaped pieces of metal, and you cut butter, hard, cold butter, chunks of butter, in with flour and salt. You're smiling, but you
know. No, I'm not. I'm trying to figure out the description.
Okay,
it sounds like something out of Dr. Seuss.
No, so you're cutting. You can also do it with a knife and fork if you don't have a pastry blender. And what you're doing is creating little bits of butter, hard, cold butter, and you don't want them to melt because you're going to create flakiness. And that's for something like a fruit pie.
But this has some flakiness to it. I see the outside. Look at the outside.
There's
of that.
Really no flakiness. There's mostly tenderness. It's almost like a sugar cookie.
And this is what you get from leaving it at room temperature and creaming it.
Correct. And then you're going to chill it and roll it out, and it's going to be like you're eating this sublime heaven on top of that crust.
I mean, look at the back of this thing.
I know,
there's
right?
There's flakiness to it.
No, I mean, there's little bits of flakes, but it's mostly tender.
Yeah.
It's more tender than flaky.
It's firm,
put it
though.
That way. It's firm. You want some structure,
firm,
right?
Firm but tender.
Firm but tender.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Chef Gail Sokol joins us. And the loose theme is cooking with curds. And what other things do we have besides lemon and lime curds? And by the way, the lime curd in this is just off the charts.
Isn't it
unbelievable? It's not too sweet,
yeah.
But it's not too tart.
No, it's
firm
wonderful.
And soft and sweet and tart.
Well, I'm a proponent of using a little gelatin to stabilize your curd.
Yeah.
So what I did was I made this curd. It's a stovetop custard.
Yep.
It really, if you go to England, you can have, you know, clotted cream and lemon curd. And this was basically discovered in the 1800s, years and years and years ago. And it's delicious, but it can be used for so much more than just on scones. It can be used, like you see, as a filling for a pie. You can fold it into some whipped cream, call it a lemon mousse, fold it into a cheesecake batter. So you'd have like, you know, little lines of or little veins of lemon or lime filling in between that cheesecake filling. And you cannot make it with, you can make it with lemon, lime, mango, anything, blood orange, any type of citrus would be really outstanding.
You know, I've met your husband. It's remarkable he's not 900 pounds.
Well, yeah.
How do you get away with that with all your skills?
I put a lock on the refrigerator, Ray. Absolutely.
Oh, come on.
No,
really?
No,
in real life?
No. He's learned. He's learned. I've trained him very well.
Somehow I believe that's true.
Chef, I love you.
Chef Gail Sokol joins us. 800-348-2551 is our number. You want to talk about baking with curds? You want to talk about anything else? We would love to hear from you. And tell you what, let's take a break right now, and then we will come back, and we will get going here on a Food Friday. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, and we have our friend Chef Gail Sokol with us today. We are talking about baking with curds. What you brought is not a meringue pie. Clearly, you made that very clear during the break.
Technically, it is a lime curd. So if you're making a lemon or a lime meringue pie,
yeah.
It has the same components. It's got the crust, it's got the filling, and it's got the meringue on top, but the filling is made a little differently. It's lacking something, cornstarch. It's lacking some form of starch to thicken, a thickening agent.
That's pretty thick, though.
Well, we're using egg yolks, and we're using the power of that egg to thicken it all by itself. We've got butter, sugar, egg yolks, whole eggs, and the fruit juice of the lime, and that's it. And you have to be very careful over the stove when you whisk it.
Why?
Because you want to make sure that curd doesn't turn into curdle.
Oh,
you know
it?
What I mean?
Yeah.
You'd have this delicious lime scrambled egg, which you don't want.
No.
So, you know, you want to make sure that you be careful that you never bring it to a boil. You want to just whisk it constantly. You don't want to leave it. And then once on medium heat, and then once it happens within a few minutes, you take it off the heat and pour it through a sieve over an ice water bath.
You know, it's a hot day. We said that at the outset today.
Yes.
How long will that thing last sitting at room temperature before it becomes a puddle?
Well, they say, really, you should not be making a meringue on a hot, you know, on a hot, humid day.
Yeah.
But if it's refrigerated, it should be fine.
Yeah.
Sitting here, I mean, I don't think it's going to last that long. I think we have enough people that will eat it. But it would stay. I would say I had mine when I made another one for Mother's Day, and it lasted a couple of days in the fridge.
In the fridge.
Beautifully, yeah.
Gail Sokol is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have any baking questions today, you can email voxpop@wamc.org. What else can we do with curds?
Well, curds are, in a way, it's a custard, but it's almost like a jammy thing. You could put it on toast.
Yeah.
You could put it on a muffin. You could put it as a filling for a muffin. I mean, it's your imagination is the only thing that will hold you back. You can do so much with them. You could actually use it as a cake filling. So you make a cake, you put a layer down, you curd it, put a little whipped cream, put another cake layer, that would be so delicious for a sponge cake or just a yellow cake or a white cake. Beautiful.
Now, you said earlier that you used some gelatin in this.
I did. And I know Martha Stewart and I share the same thought, that I like to have a nice clean slice when I cut into my pies. So what I did was you take a little unflavored gelatin, and I think for this pie, I specifically took about maybe a half a teaspoon.
Yeah.
Put a couple teaspoons of cold liquid on it because you want to bloom the gelatin.
Yeah.
Because if you look at gelatin, it's just granules and they're very crunchy and hard.
Mm-hmm.
So not that I would know they're crunchy. I've never eaten them,
but
are very hard. So you need to bloom them and soften them. That's another word for soften.
Okay.
Stop laughing at me.
No.
And then you put cold liquid in there and let it get almost where it looks like a jellyfish. It looks like jelly.
Yeah.
And it gets sort of firm. And then once we boil this and get the proper thickening strength of it, we take it off the heat and plop in that little blob of Jell-O or gelatin, unflavored gelatin, whisk it. It will melt instantly. And once you refrigerate it, it stabilizes it. It sets it a little bit more. And it's not going to set it, so it's rubber. You have to be careful you don't use too much gelatin.
Oh, very interesting. Well, one thing that is clear, the lime taste really gets you right up front.
It does.
How much lime juice is in
this? I used half a cup of lime juice. I got my husband squeezing the limes.
Oh, really?
And the zest. That's where your essential oils and the true flavor of your curd will be, is in the zest.
How do you make a zest?
Come on.
I don't cook, Chef Gail. I don't do anything.
You take like a zester or even a grater. You know, they have these.
So it's grating.
It's grating.
Why don't you just say grating? Why do you have to say zest?
Well, zesting is the word of choice. So grating, all right, we'll use grating
now,
for you.
But that I understand.
Okay.
So zesting is just a fancy word
of grating
that the chefs say.
But you want to grate just the colored portion of that citrus fruit. Otherwise, you're going to end up with that pith, the P-I-T-H, which is sort of white and bitter.
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to
it's
rotate
a good description
the
of me, actually.
Yes, maybe so.
There you go. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Caroline in LaGrangeville. Caroline, you're on.
Yes. I've never heard of a curd before, and I know you've been talking about ingredients and things to do, things not to do, but could you just quickly walk us through the step-by-step, like first you take this many eggs and then you do something
sure.
with zesting
okay.
and then you squeeze
Why not?
And then you...
Absolutely, Caroline. Okay, so you get a nice medium-sized saucepan. You want to make sure that it's not something that's going to react with the citrus, that it's a heavy-duty saucepan. because you don't want your citrus to taste metallic once it's done. Ah. And you want to put in, this is what I have in my lime curd, 1 cup of granulated sugar. You just put this all in. It's sort of a one pot curd. I put in a zest from 1 large lime, 1/2 cup of fresh lime juice or whatever citrus fruit you're using, 4 large eggs, the entire egg, and 1 large egg yolk. And then 1.5 sticks of butter that I sort of cut up. I even let it get a little softer so it takes less time to melt. Put it over medium heat and don't walk away. Stick with it. With a whisk, get into all the edges of your pan and keep going. Keep going. It'll almost come to a boil. And if you do notice a little bit of the egg, you know, curdling and getting firm, which is what eggs do. That's how they thicken. Mm-hmm. You take it off the heat, and on the side, you're going to have a bowl with icy water. You're going to put a smaller bowl in it with a sieve, and then you're going to stop the cooking process by pouring it through that sieve as soon as it gets nice and thick.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So it's
okay,
really
I
easy.
Never would have guessed.
And if you were using, if you were making, let's say, a pastry cream or a lemon meringue pie that doesn't use a curd but uses like a lemon filling, you normally would use cornstarch as a thickening agent. And cornstarch is protecting of eggs. Cornstarch or any starch will coat the strands of protein in an egg and allow the boiling temperature to be higher so that you can actually bring that mixture to a boil without it curdling, but it must have a starch in it. And starches never reach their full thickening strength unless they come to a boil. But a curd, you never want it to come to a boil because there's no protecting cornstarch in there.
Caroline.
I get it.
You get
Thank
it?
Thank you.
By the way, Caroline, when you get back from your drive, if you go to WAMC.org and hit the page for today's show, I've embedded a video. Gail does great videos, baking how-tos, and there's a video showing you how to make this.
And yes, and a recipe.
Okay?
Fantastic.
Caroline,
thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Drive safely. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Sylvia is in Napanock. Sylvia.
Hi, I have a question on how do you keep the cheesecake from cracking?
Okay, so have you typically made many cheesecakes, Sylvia?
I made one just last weekend.
Okay.
And it was delicious, but it had all these, it looked like an earthquake.
Okay. I have had a few earthquakes myself, Sylvia. I understand.
Just close your eyes. It's very easy.
So what you probably did and did not mean to do is you overbaked it. So cheesecakes, you want to bake them just until they are barely shimmy. You know, when you shimmy the springform pan, it should be sort of more solid on the outside edges, which will bake first, and then the middle will still slightly shimmy. And some recipes will have you do this in a hot water bath. So you actually put the springform pan, you line it with heavy duty foil, and then put it into a big roasting pan and fill it halfway up with water, which will temper the temperature of your oven so that the eggs, and which is, it's a custard, a cheesecake, will actually thicken a little bit less violently than without, and will keep the heat more tempered around your cheesecake filling so it won't crack. The other thing to do is just make sure you don't overbake it. Did you follow the recipe, or did you say, wow, it doesn't look done, I'm going to keep it in for a little longer?
That's what I did. I kept it in a little longer.
That was the mistake, Sylvia. I guarantee if you made it, how long did you bake it for?
The recipe called for an hour, and I think I left it in an extra 10 minutes.
Okay, so that shouldn't make too much of a crack, but if your oven's a little on the hot side and you left it in for a little bit longer, that could do it. But do me a favor, after that 1 hour, sort of give it a little shimmy with your hot mitt and see if it's still a little loose in the center, and then take it out, because carryover cooking will continue to cook through even as it cools down, and you'll get the perfect cheesecake.
D Do you do much shimmying, Sylvia?
You know, I had tried the cake tester, and it came out kind of gooky, so that's why I left it in longer.
Okay, so Sylvia, a cake tester really should not be used for cheesecake because you're not going to get the same results. Cheesecakes will always come out a little gunky because there's cheese in there. There's cream cheese and sour cream or whatever you have in there, ricotta. So it's going to never come out clean. And if you bake it until it comes out clean, you will have a volcano.
Oh, is that good?
No.
Oh, it's not good.
No.
Okay.
That was my mistake.
Yes. Sorry, I know. I've done it before too, Sylvia, so you're in good company.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Is gunky an actual chef term or is...
I
like that.
I think it is.
Yeah, it came out a little gunky. This whole shimmying business is interesting. Have to do a show where you...
Shimmy.
This is an actual term.
Shimmy is an actual term. If you mention to a chef, Did you, when you went back, did it shimmy? They'll know exactly what you're talking about.
It sounds like
absolutely. We have our own language, Ray.
Philadelphia Soul. They did the shimmy, I think. Yeah, let's see. This is from Clee. A strawberry rhubarb cake? Friend was recently asking around for a recipe for strawberry rhubarb cake, and now I'm obsessed with the idea. Years ago, I had a strawberry rhubarb buckle. That was amazing, but I was thinking about maybe making some kind of a fruit compote between layers of some kind of white cake. Any suggestions?
Well, the one thing I would suggest, you could use any white cake, yellow cake, or a sponge cake would be wonderful. Just make sure your compote is thick. You don't want it to be too wet because it's going to, unless you do want your layers to be softer. Mm. Sometimes people do like that sort of oozing into the layers. There I go with the term again.
Oozing, shimmying.
And, you know, I think that might be a nice thing to see that little bit of sauce in there. You know, it's super easy to make a compote with strawberries. Just slice your strawberries or quarter them. You know, into nice little chunks, bite-sized pieces. Slice your rhubarb. You never want to eat a rhubarb leaf because it'll be the last thing you do.
Are they deadly?
They're supposedly poisonous. Yes, poisonous and deadly are the same thing.
Well, no. I mean, if it doesn't, it can make you sick.
Well, you want to find out. I don't want to find out. So I don't ever eat a leaf of a rhubarb. So you slice it thin. And if it's really thick, the stalk, just cut it lengthwise and cut it in small little chunks about the same size as your strawberry. Put them together with a little sugar, a little lemon juice, and just cook them. You don't even need a recipe, and just let it go down till it's sort of syrupy. And basically you want the rhubarb to soften. Sometimes you want the rhubarb to cook a little longer. So you put your strawberries in even after.
Really? You want to know something? I have not eaten strawberry rhubarb pie in years because somebody once told me you could get very ill.
Well, just from the leaves.
Yeah, but I don't even want to get that close.
Oh, see, you're real.
I'm scared.
You're scared.
I'm very scared.
You're very scared. But the one thing I did want to say is I believe on my video I have a strawberry rhubarb compote recipe on one of my videos. So take a look.
There you go.
Yes, I do.
All right. But not a rhubarb leaf compote.
Not a rhubarb leaf
compote. Okay, because that would make it sick, right?
Yes. All right. No.
Chef Gail is our guest. Chef Gail Sokol. 800-348-2551. A bit more obstreperous than usual, but still welcome in the studio.
Thank you.
Mark writes, it sounds like you have the best technique for the perfect lemon meringue pie. You have my mouth watering. But what about another summer favorite? Do you have any secrets for making the perfect banana cream pie? Please say yes, please. Banana cream pie is delicious. That's from Mark.
I do have a banoffee.
I'm sorry?
A banoffee pie, which is banana and this beautiful, beautiful custard. It's British, but it's very, very similar to a banana cream pie. And if he wants to check it out on my website, on the YouTube.
What is the URL again, Gail? I know I link these things, but I swear to you.
Just ChefGailSokol.com.
Okay.
That's my website. And you can even just go to my YouTube channel, Chef Gail Sokol.
You mentioned blood oranges, which I absolutely love them.
Yes.
And have you done this recipe with blood oranges?
I have not, but all you need is the juice. All you need to do is juice. You can even buy juice if you don't have the blood oranges and they're not in season.
Yeah.
You can just buy it. Just buy it, you know, boxed or canned.
Is there anything that won't work?
No, anything citrus would be fabulous. I mean, I wouldn't make a banana curd. I mean,
Is it possible? Probably.
Yeah. But you're going to end up in more of a banana custard pie. So why not just make a custard and slice bananas on the bottom of the crust and then have your whole custard on top. That would be delicious.
Chef Gail Sokol is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to the phones in a moment. Matt writes in, a little off topic here. I have printed out Gail's pizza dough recipe, but have not made it yet. However, I have tried making other pizza doughs recently, and the cleanup is difficult. The small dough pieces stick to the bowl sides, utensils, and it's hard to clean off. Is there a trick to cleaning all this up without clogging my sink drain? That sounds like a legitimate concern from Matt.
Yes. Okay, Matt. I feel your pain. So what you need to do is when you're making your dough, whether it's in an electric mixer or sometimes I'm in a hurry and I just make it in a big bowl,
yeah.
You want to make sure that all that flour is blended in with the water and the oil and the yeast and the salt. You don't want to have those little bits. So get all your dough together so you have this soft dough and then slap it around, develop the gluten, okay? Another official term,
develop
slap.
Develop the gluten.
No, slap.
That's the name of my second album, by the way.
And then once you're done and you go to your work surface if you want to knead it on a work surface or a wooden you know, bench, whatever you have, take a bench scraper. You know, it's like a rectangular piece of metal. I'm being very basic for you, Rick. And it's got a little wooden handle for most of them. Some of them are all metal.
Yeah.
And you scrape against. You've seen those, right?
No.
No. Okay. So
if I say yes, will you not be mean to me?
No, I will
yes,
not be
I have
mean
seen
to
them.
You.
Yes, they're okay. Very nice.
They're wonderful and they're lifesavers. You just scrape up your work surface and you don't have to worry. You just go over it with a sponge after and all those little pieces are done. Now, when you have your bowl and it's got a little dough in it, you can get a bowl scraper, which is more flexible, like a little piece of plastic that's flexible. Don't laugh.
Why am I laughing?
And you can scrape out your bowl so you don't have those little bits and don't throw them in the sink, Matt, throw them in the garbage and then you won't be clogging up your sink.
All right.
That's what I do.
That's eminently logical. Chef Gail Sokol is our guest today. 800-348-2551. Let's grab one call before the next break. We go to Adam in, it's pretty loud, Adam in Sandersfield. Adam, you're on.
Yeah. Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's a little noisy because you're on the speakerphone, but we'll try to make do.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wanted to let you know that the zester, it's important that your listeners understand that a zester is a very, very fine grater. So usually in the old times, before they had us using zesters in the kitchen, we would have to carefully peel off the peel of the lemon or the lime and then chop it very, very, very fine. The zester is really, it's really a grater, but it's, the important piece is for everybody to understand is that it's a very, very fine grating. So you don't want to use like a box grater or something that's hard to, well, if you have a box grater and you don't have a zester, a great trick is to put a piece of saran wrap on the finest part of your box grater and grate it onto the saran wrap. And you won't get saran wrap with your grating.
Okay.
But it'll keep the grated lemon or lime on the outside of the saran wrap, and you have a very fine grate.
Gail, yes. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely true and well said. I just know that I was talking to Ray. He's a beginner.
Okay.
And we were trying to just get a basis of knowledge, a grater zester.
And Adam, so you have to understand that I'm not too good with in the kitchen, and Gail tries.
We were
to
making
help.
An analogy,
yes,
Adam. That's
she's
all.
She's just trying to make me understand, and it doesn't. It never works every time we do this. 800-348-2551 is our number. The great chef Gail Sokol is with us today. Not the least bit grating so far. We'll be back. Can you use a belt sander to make the zest? Go down to the Home Depot and get yourself a belt sander.
You got to have a very strong piece of citrus fruit to put up with that.
But you could use lots of stuff from the hardware store, right?
Yeah, I know a lot of chefs that go to the hardware store to find some cool stuff.
Like
to,
what?
Well, you can use, I know PVC pipes used all the time to put little cakes in as a mold. It's instead of a metal mold, it's this PVC pipe, and you can put little cakes in, like cut them with
a cookie.
Is that
even safe? I mean, can you put a PVC pipe in an oven?
Yeah, well, it's if it's never been used for anything else. I mean, I wouldn't take it out of your house and use it. Mm. You know, you want to get it in the hardware store, never been used.
Okay.
Or you can use things like...
I don't know about that. Doesn't the PVC leach out when it gets to a certain temperature?
You may have to line it with some, you know, put some plastic wrap or acetate sheets around the out, you know, the inside of the diameter, and then you can put your cakes in. I know people do that all the time.
That is so weird.
And put mousse in, and then you just lift the PVC pipe out, right? And then you have this little cake.
Wow,
right?
A tubular cake.
Yes.
Genius.
It's just very easy.
Chef Gail Sokol, you never cease to amaze me. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Northampton. Nora, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a do-it-yourself wedding in my backyard coming on up, and I have an abundance of rhubarb. So I was hoping to add to my repertoire. I know you just talked about a compote and cake, which I'm not sure I wanted to do, but I always do the strawberry rhubarb pie, but I wondered if you had some other
Chef, before you start, I just want to remind you, Nora, do not eat the leaves. This is one thing I would like to just...
Oh, God.
Please don't.
Nora knows. Nora knows.
This is something that I feel strongly about.
Don't be a chicken.
All right.
All right, Nora. So one idea for rhubarb would be to get a singular layer cake, like a slab cake, you could do a big sheet pan if you're having a brunch after your wedding, or you're just, you know, doing it yourself, or making little muffins and putting slices of rhubarb on top before you bake it. So on top of the batter, slice the rhubarb, put it on your cake. You could even make, you know, geometric shapes with the rhubarb, you know, like sticks of it, because it's in the shape of sticks. Baking it off, put a little sugar on top or cinnamon sugar before you put it in the oven, and then cut it into squares. That would be gorgeous, like a single layer cake, and putting some rhubarb on top.
Oh yeah,
that's something lovely that I would do, to use an abundance of rhubarb. The pie is the big thing. If you don't like compote, I know. You know, people, you can use compote as a side of a beautiful pound cake, or even a wedding cake with some whipped cream. Or if you made meringues, Nora, you can make some meringues, you know, hard meringues that you bake in the oven, like a little pavlovas. And then you could put some whipped cream and strawberry or just rhubarb compote on top. And that would be a lovely little little dessert.
What do you think, Nora?
Oh, that sounds nice. Individual. Yes, I like that.
Yeah, you could have a pavlova, you know, like an ice cream. What do they have, like ice cream bars or something at weddings? You could have a pavlova bar. Oh, my gosh, Nora, you would be setting a trend.
Nora, is this your own wedding?
Truly.
No, it's my son.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Good.
They'll be writing about you in the newspaper.
Well, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551, the number if you want to talk to Chef Gail Sokol today. Anna in Adams is on. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. You talked about making some different kinds of curd. You mentioned mango, and I was wondering how you make that, but also if you could make a rhubarb curd.
You know, you probably could. I never have. You have to worry about the stringiness of rhubarb, and you want to try to bring out that rhubarb flavor. So citrus is usually the most common flavors of curds. Mango, you could use like a mango nectar, or you could puree your mango. Get a nut. You got to make sure that mango is ripe. You got to smell that mango from across the room. It's got to be really ripe and give to the touch in order to use it for a curd. And if you wanted to try it with rhubarb, you'd end up sort of making, I would make a compote first, put it in with the curd, all right, and then strain it out, because you want to get the stringiness out. You don't want the stringiness in your curd. You want a curd that's nice and clean, that when you bite into it, you're just getting that beautiful custard.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, and some orange zest might be good in there, too.
That would be absolutely delicious, and lime would work as well, too, Anna.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Now, it occurred to me while you were talking to Anna.
It occurred to you?
You see? Oh. You see what I did? I love the combo of lime and cherry.
Yes.
Could you do something and make a curd? Would the cherry ruin it?
No. You could even make a curd and then put some either fresh cherries that have been pitted on top of the curd.
Oh, yeah.
And you could put, maybe whipped cream on top, or fold the curd in with the cherries.
That's what I'm
and
talking
whipped cream
about. Yeah.
And lighten it up and almost make it moussey and light.
Mm.
And with a little gelatin, you would almost end up with a nice little like refrigerator pie,
I love those.
That would be nice, yeah.
Chef Gail Sokol is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike is in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Thank you. Gee, I get to talk to two geniuses in the same call.
Oh, really?
Right.
I see.
Here's
one.
My question. No, Gail, real quick. How do chefs or cooks in general dispose of oil that you're frying? When you're cooking a lot of things in the frying pan and you're accumulating oil, you need to dump it out and add fresh oil. How do you dispose of it? I can't put it in my car. It's burning oil like crazy. I know I can't do that, but go ahead.
If it's oil and not like a solid fat, what I usually do is I allow that oil to cool down. That's the best thing to do because you don't want to burn anybody. And then I pour it down the drain with the garbage disposal going, and you put it on cold water. Mm. Make the water super cold. So any oil, if it is from a solid fat, it will congeal and it won't stick to your drain and your pipes down there. That's what
solid
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Got to try to remember that.
For a liquid oil, appreciate that's what
you.
I would do. Yep.
Thanks a lot, Mike. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Chef Gail Sokol joins us on a variety of topics. This email from Mary in Wilbraham. Coconut cake is the subject. Mm. What type of frosting is traditionally used for coconut cake? 7-minute.
Okay, so you can use a 7-minute frosting, absolutely, which is sort of a
7-minute was a question mark. I apologize. 7-minute?
You can use like a mountain frosting, which is sort of a meringue where you warm up the egg whites and you beat them with sugar, and then you could coat the whole cake in coconut. Shredded coconut, and you can even use a buttercream, a very light buttercream. You want to go really light with that, and even put some coconut extract in there to really bring out that coconut flavor.
Oh, all right, fair enough. Chef Gail Sokol joins us today. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to the email bag in a bit. Right now, we go to Beth in Huntington, Mass. Beth, you're on.
I gotta turn off my. Sorry.
Yeah, if you're driving, though, we'll make do. But if you're on the side of the road, we'd love it if you were not on speakerphone. But
okay,
I'm getting off. Being safe is the most important thing here from a legal standpoint. Okay.
Okay.
There you go.
I was wondering.
There we go. Okay. You got to turn your radio down a little bit there, Beth. Zach, the engineer, is now having a full aneurysm. So.
Okay. All right. I'm on the side of the road and I'm off speaker.
Okay.
I am a sad baker. I'm traumatized. I've been diagnosed as gluten-free. Do you recommend any cookbook? I've been picking them up, but I've been so disappointed so far.
Yeah. I don't have any cookbooks that I know of per se that I've been very happy with gluten-free. I've been more happy with experimentation, and that's something that you may need to do. So if you have a favorite recipe, see what you can do to substitute that flour for a gluten-free flour, whether it be almond flour, coconut flour. Depends on what you're trying to do, how much structure you are trying to create, whether it's a cake, a cookie, meringues, things with egg whites, things with eggs, flourless cakes like we had done.
Oh, that was delicious.
A month or two ago.
God,
those are phenomenal because they don't require any flour, any substitutions at all. So I think, Beth, I would go recipe by recipe and see what you like. Some people can handle The on-the-market gluten-free flours, sometimes they don't taste well to certain palates, and certain flours may be able to be eliminated. You may be able to create your own combination, but go one-to-one. So if you have a 1 cup of all-purpose flour in a recipe, see if you can substitute something like a coconut flour or half coconut, half almond flour, something like that, that will actually give you very close to the original product that you would have normally gotten if it wasn't gluten-free.
What do you think?
Wonderful. I'm a quarter full Slovak, and we make rusky, which is a cookie around Christmas time, which is basically cream cheese, butter, and just a whisper of flour. And my father's been inconsolable because I can't get the flakiness and the Any suggestions there?
Like, I do. I think that you could substitute almond or coconut flour. Try it once. Try half a recipe. I bet it would work. I bet it would work because you're not relying on a huge amount of flour.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Don't be scared. Be fearless, Beth. You can do it.
She never says that to me, Beth. I got to be honest with you, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Got an email from Kay in Cornwallville. And the subject heading is, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Uh-oh.
3 exclamation marks. Here we go. Love the show. Always love it when Chef Gale is on. And would hate it if you had to cancel the program. PVC, absolutely, definitely, certainly not food grade. Please, no one use PVC or probably anything from the hardware store for food prep. And that's from Kay in Cornwallville.
That okay, I understand what you're saying, Kay. And if you do use, I have not personally used it. I have seen chefs use it in restaurants.
Yeah.
And usually, or they've used the outside as a mold for, let's say, a cookie that's very flexible and moldable when it's warm, just to, you know, create a shape. But you'd have to use an inside acetate sheet. And yes, it is not food grade.
Okay.
It's not something that you were going to pour a cake batter in. Absolutely not. They have other things now, like silicone and, you know, other silipat, creating little cakes and stuff like that that are definitely food grade and food safe. So yes, I did not mean to mislead anybody, but you can find some other things that would make some, you know, interesting shapes if you coat, you know, cover them.
Right.
You could do that. Yeah.
But I'm sure there are things that be safe.
You just have to be. You have to use your head.
Like I wouldn't use nails on tuna fish sandwiches to keep them together. Right.
Correct.
All right. Let's go to Sherrod and Shokin. You're on.
Hey, I lived in Santa Fe many years ago, and my landlady, Babs Bernizer, taught me about rhubarb and how to cook it properly, which is to put just enough water to cover it, bring it to a boil, throw the water out right away, and continue steaming it without a lot of water. What happens, that first load of water carries most of the bitter, so you don't have to put so much sugar in.
Okay, that's a great idea. I don't put that much water in, very, very little, sometimes even like a quarter of a cup, a few tablespoons, depending on how much rhubarb I have in there, and just a teeny little bit of sugar and a little lemon juice or lime juice. That sounds like good advice.
Because it takes the bitter out, and just you cover it with water the first pass, pour the water out after it comes to a boil, right away after it comes to a boil, that carries most of the bitter away. And then you don't need to put so much sugar in.
Okay, that sounds like a good plan. I have never experienced that much bitterness in my rhubarb, but it's a possibility that that's good advice.
It's sour.
Yeah. Right. Yep. It is sour.
Well, Sherrod, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. Drew writes in, I don't get rhubarb. I've never eaten anything with rhubarb in it that tasted good. Bitter always seems really, really bitter to me. I think it's kind of like cilantro for me, and that's from Drew.
You know what? It's possible that you are, I don't know, genetically rhubarb adverse. I don't know.
Interesting.
I've never heard
Maybe that's
of that.
Evolution. Maybe Drew is very evolved.
It is possible. There are people that cannot handle their, like, super fooder, you know, super tasters, and they can't handle certain things with strong flavors like coffee, super, super strong.
Yeah.
Or they can't handle bitter or spice. And you may be one of those people that just is adverse to rhubarb naturally. That is a possibility.
All right. Thank you for that one, Drew. Let's, one more email or two, and then we'll go back to the phones here to finish it up. John writes, on cleaning up after pizza dough, just let the bowl and utensils sit out overnight to dry. then scrape them with a scraper and toss in the garbage. So much easier.
Sometimes the ingredients, the flour and the water, almost are like cement on the bowl. So you really want to get that off before it gets too hard.
Yeah.
And you really want to do that soon after you get the dough out of the bowl.
All right, one more email, and then we'll hit a couple of calls here before we wrap. And Tom writes, I have recently fallen in love with key lime pie. It's my absolute favorite. I was buying it in the store, decided to make it myself. Do you recommend recipes with or without eggs? And how can I incorporate whipped cream into the recipe?
I would save the whipped cream for on top, because key lime pie, you just want that beautiful layer of key lime, and usually it contains sweetened condensed milk.
Yeah.
It's usually not made with a curd. I used to make that for a restaurant. We used to make tarts.
Yeah.
And I would put whipped cream on top, just put very little sugar in it, a little splash of vanilla, and beat the heck out of it till you get nice billowy peaks, and top that key lime pie with the whipped cream. The other thing you could do is take the filling and fold whipped cream into it to lighten it.
Yeah.
But I would add a little gelatin so it just gets a little bit more structure.
And then he followed up and said, what about the crust? I've been using a shortbread crust. What would you recommend?
Yeah, you could use a shortbread. Today was basically a shortbread crust. Cookie crust, shortbread crust, very similar. You could use a crumb crust. You could even use like a crust with a little coconut in it.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Oh, very
tropical.
Yep.
You'd think you're in the Caribbean islands. you could do whatever you wanted. I mean, you could use nuts, ground nuts. You could use whatever you want, but it sounds like you're on the right path.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones, and Christine is on the Mass Pike. Hello there, Christine.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the show. You're on.
Thank you. Yeah, the question I have is, I like to make homemade jam, and the recipe I use indicates that I should limit the amount of fruit that I process in a batch to 10 cups of fresh fruit, which cooks down to about 6 cups. And they say if you use more fruit, you'll end up with watery jam. And the question I have is, the process of making it, there's not a lot of boiling or reducing of the fruit. It's not like you're boiling it for 20 or 30 minutes. And I'm wondering, why does it matter how much fruit you use in the batch, and how do commercial companies get away with making industrial-sized batches of fruit without it being watery?
Okay, we got about a minute here,
okay,
Gail.
Okay, so basically, it depends on how much pectin is in the fruit, and that will determine how thick it gets. All fruits are different. They have different pectin amounts in them. So certain fruits may not thicken as well as others. But that particular recipe, whatever you're using, you may want to try some other recipes and try to sort of open your world up a little bit and see if maybe you can find a recipe that will actually thicken by cooking it down, and you can have as much fruit as you want. But again, the more water the fruit has and the less pectin, you're not going to get very much thickening.
Christine, thanks a lot. We're just about out of time here. Susie writes, the preferred method of disposing of used cooking oil is to cool, pour it into a container such as an empty milk wax milk carton, and then throw it in the garbage. It's never a good idea to pour fats because the municipalities can get upset.
Okay.
It can clog the systems.
Well, mea culpa, because I don't use that much frying oil. I don't fry a lot. So when I do use it, it's a small amount, and I just put it down my drain. So if I, you know, but I don't deep fry.
Got another show. Hey, thanks for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Support comes from Saratoga. Now you're talking, I'm thinking about donuts. I don't have. Saratoga Performing Arts Center presenting the 45th annual Fryhofer Saratoga Jazz Festival, June 25th and 26th. Full details and tickets at SPAC.org. River Valley Co-op, featuring local and organically grown groceries in Northampton and East Hampton. More information at rivervalley.coop. And Del Mar Farmers Market, featuring local and organic farm products, baked goods, and fair trade crafts, every Saturday from 9 to 1 at 332 Kenwood Avenue, delmarmarket.org. Once again, thanks to Gail Sokol for being here. The recipe for the beautiful lime curd tart is right at wamc.org/voxpop, and check that video out. Really cool. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Have yourself a splendid and safe and hopefully curdful weekend.